I understand that there's been an eruption of nationwide mass protests in the pro-democracy movement in Nepal in order to oust the king. These protests were sparked by a general strike that was called by the Seven Party Alliance. I was wondering if you could tell me who the Seven Party Alliance is and what happened when they called for this strike.
Well, it's actually the Seven Party Alliance plus the Maoists. The seven largest above ground political parties have joined together and have been holding dialogues about how to accomplish democracy in the face of this autocratic regime that took over February 1st, 2005. And they've also recently joined hands with the Maoists, which sounds improbable, but it's really happened, and the Maoists have committed to the process of democracy. So, as you said, in the beginning of April, this alliance plus the Maoists called for a 4-day general strike. And even before that strike began, students started to protest, and then there was some police repression against that. And then the next day, journalists started to protest against the press restrictions, and there was severe repression against that, and many journalists were arrested. And when it looked like the protests were going to actually be large and successful, the royal regime called a curfew and made it illegal for people to be in the streets in the daytime, basically, and also issued a shoot on sight order for the security forces.
What has happened then, in terms of the security forces? Have they shot anyone? Has anyone been injured? Has anyone been killed? What's been going on?
People have been killed. I think it's three that I know about so far, and I think there probably are more that are not reported yet or not confirmed yet. A number of people who have been detained may have disappeared as well. And Nepal has actually led the world in disappearances for some years, and there's no reason to expect that to stop now. The security forces have been putting down the protests, which have been happening anyway, despite the curfews and the restriction against protesting. And they've been doing it in most cases with lathi charges, which means beating people with batons, rushing people and beating them with batons. The protesters often respond by throwing stones and basically trying to remain in the street. And in a number of cases, the security forces have shot them with rubber bullets and used a lot of tear gas, and in some cases used lethal bullets, more lethal bullets. There have been a large number of pretty serious injuries so far, and there have been volunteer medical teams on the streets trying to treat protesters, as well as treating any police who may have gotten injured.
Can you talk a little bit more about how the protesters have been expressing their anger toward the king and/or their vision for a new political system, a democratic system in Nepal?
Sure. I mean, the basic drive of this current wave of protest is to establish a republic. In Nepali, it's Ganatantra, republicanism, which is the goal now. I mean, such a large proportion of the population seems to be united against the king and basically have reached the last straw, where they are just completely tired of having a king, Somebody telling them what they can and cannot do, say, think. And in terms of how people express that symbolically, one way is to burn effigies of the king, which is a common thing people do in South Asia as a protest. People have also been tearing down symbols of the royal regime, like statues and pillars that represent the government, and putting their own words onto government signs. Instead of the royal government, they'd write Democratic Republic of Nepal. I saw a photo of a garland of shoes around an upside-down photo of the king, which is pretty heavy insult in Nepali culture, to hang a garland of shoes instead of flowers around somebody.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on how people are aiding each other during these protests? You talked about volunteer medical teams. Are there any other ways that people are expressing mutual aid?
Yeah, absolutely. There are, well, in the hotter areas of the country, a lot of people provide water water is very important during the protests in the hot places. And there are also many Nepali organizations who are human rights organizations. They have special vests that make them apparent that they are human rights monitors at these protests and rallies. And they're there trying to document and trying to prevent further violence just by being witnesses. But in many cases, they are actually getting beaten up themselves and arrested themselves, and also, you know, restricted from being out on the streets because of the curfew. And in addition to the human rights monitors, there are also large numbers of journalists who are trying to report on the rallies. And they are also getting beaten up, arrested, and injured in the process of trying to do their work.
Can you give us some sense of the scale of these protests in Nepal?
I'll try by giving you a few snapshots of some different locations. In Kathmandu, despite the strict curfew, the Professional Lawyers Association, the Nepal Bar Association, decided to have a protest against what they call the unlawful barring of any protests. So 1,200 to 1,500 lawyers gathered at the headquarters building in Kathmandu and set out to protest, and then they were blocked by the police, who cordoned off a line preventing them from exiting the compound. So they tried to break through this compound, and four people were shot with bullets and injured severely, and 50 others were injured with batons, and also a few broken hands, and the president of the Nepal Bar Association and other high officers were arrested. So that's 1,200 to 1,500 lawyers in the capital, which is a huge number of professional lawyers. Students and others are also protesting in the capital as much as they are able to. In a city in western Nepal, the very day that the curfew ended there, 25 to 30,000 women gathered from all of the surrounding villages and all of the women's groups and women's associations. And that's a huge number of women, many of whom walked up to 4 hours from the villages just to take part in the protests. And in a small town that I've in Baglung district, this is the Baglung headquarters, which the town itself has about 150 to 200 buildings in it, and 3,000 people showed up from all the neighboring villages to take part in a protest. And then that protest was repressed by the police, and I think about 70 to 100 people were arrested, and many people injured as well, and journalists and human rights monitors arrested. So that gives you an idea of the size of the protests. Even in a country like Nepal, where roads don't extend everywhere, and to go to a protest you have to walk for hours and take the whole day off of your normal working in the fields, still people are coming out all over the place in mass numbers.
And this is a protest that represents people from various parts of the political spectrum. This isn't a primarily Maoist movement at this point, or at least this latest eruption of protests hasn't been a movement for Maoism specifically.
Right, that's absolutely correct. The Maoists have actually come more toward the democratic center, and these are actually the more centrist parties of Nepal that are providing the bulk of the public support, actually. And that ranges from the pro-democracy party, sort of the centrist party, toward the more leftist parties as well. And it's only the king's own party that is not supporting it, basically.
Thank you.
Thank you.